The unit is called A200. It is Israel's military intelligence unit responsible for espionage and cyber warfare. It has existed since before the State of Israel itself and is made up of men and women who do compulsory military service for 2 or 3 years. But A200 does not accept volunteers. It is the unit that examines students from all over the country and decides who to invite to its selection process. It has absolute priority over any other unit. It is the elite. Candidates are usually young people who excel in mathematics, physics, and computer science, or who know Middle Eastern languages such as Farsi, which is spoken mainly in Iran, one of Israel's enemies. But the big filter is a military psychotechnical test that generates a score called Kava. To enter the unit, you have to get at least 53 out of 56, a mark reserved for less than 10% of recruits. But 8200 does not just select the best, it molds them. After a basic course that includes notions of infantry combat, it reaches the serious stuff, the professional courses. For months, the soldiers devote themselves entirely to study, working from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. One of them summed it up like this: "Oh, I was recruited into the 8200 just after finishing high school. I can assure you that the few months of study I did in the unit were more intense than all the years of high school." Upon graduation, new members are distributed among the unit's departments and bases. Those who get the best scores are sent to the Military Intelligence Directorate, the place where critical army operations are decided. Outwardly, everything is a mystery. No one knows the unit's organizational chart or its members, nor is it known what the name of its commander is, and they refer to them with letters in the purest James Bond style, M. Well, let's see. In fact, the name of the penultimate commander is known. Well, his name is Josie Ariel. I covered his eyes because he had a very determined look. And this was leaked because he self-published a book on Amazon using his pseudonym and his good pseudonym and his good pseudonym, almost as good as M. Rajoy. The thing is that in the book, he had put a contactee email that was one created for such a necessary, but that his personal Gmail account was his recovery account. That's how they got to his Google Maps profile, Google Calendar, and even his Wikipedia profile, where he had written on the page about the Palestinian refugee problem. It's in Hebrew, so I don't think we're gonna understand anything here, but the point is that it was quite a blow for Yossi, since he was supposed to be an expert in digital footprints, and well, they had caught him for little more than a PDF. Beyond the secrecy, the ideology of the unit is simple. Nothing is impossible. Its internal culture is more like that of a tech startup than a military unit. There is a hierarchy, but the distance between officers and soldiers is minimal. It is assumed that any recruit can approach the high command if they consider a matter urgent. Most recruits voluntarily extend their service because they feel that the 8200 is a professional springboard and being on the inside is better than any master's degree in technology. According to this Business Insider article, it is the best technology school on the planet, and several of the most important technology companies in Israel are founded by them. Former members of 8200, Checkpoint Software, Palo Alto Networks, and Sierra, all focused on data protection. It's normal for them to know about the subject, since for years they did exactly the opposite. They were the ones who developed software to spy on, manipulate, and infiltrate enemy systems. Tools capable of dismantling an entire nuclear program without firing a single shot. Because the most ambitious operation in cyber warfare came from the computers of 8200 Stuart. My. Before continuing, if you don't want any intelligence agency to hack you, you have to switch to Proton, the sponsor of this video. Just kidding, okay? If an intelligence agency wanted anything from you, they would already have it. But luckily, ordinary people only have to worry about simpler vulnerabilities, such as using weak passwords and then repeating them on all our accounts, because the number of leaks that have been happening lately is enough to make a movie. The password problem is easily solved with the Proton Password Manager, which automatically generates complex passwords for you, and you don't have to use them. Memorize them because the manager memorizes them for you. You just install the extension in your browser or the application on your phone, and that's it. It's easy to use and secure. Proton has a free version for you to try it out, and then a more complete paid version with more features. But the interesting thing is that the free version is the same in terms of security. That doesn't change. In my case, I use the entire suite, the password manager, the encrypted media service, the VPN, even the calendar. Just be careful. And if you enter from my link, it will cost you €1 less per month than if you enter from Google. Below, I'll leave you the links for both the free manager and the complete suite. And now, let's continue. In the 21st century, a new war is being fought on the internet. And Israel's greatest enemy is Iran. A regime that never hit its goal of destroying Israel, and that was silently moving towards nuclear capacity. But in 2010, the government of the Ayatollahs had to admit that it had suffered a minor setback. its nuclear program had been destroyed. The culprit was a computer worm, Stuit, a malware specifically created to sabotage their uranium 235 separation 5 separation centrifuges at their hatchery. Natural uranium, as you can see here, is a mixture of three isotopes. Don't worry, folks, we're not going back to school, but we're gonna have to explain a little bit about the uranium enrichment process so we can understand what Stuit did. When you have natural uranium oil like this, almost all of it, like 99%, is uranium-238. Then there's 0.7% of the uranium-235 isotope, which is the cool one, because it's very radioactive. Unk. And then there's 234, which, well, it's just sitting there and nobody cares, I guess. I'm not Heisenberg either. Anyway, the point is that in order to use uranium to play God, you have to change it from these nondescript percentages to these other ones. Okay? The revive has to go from 0.7% to 90% to 90%. This is what is known as the process of enriching uranium, and it is done using centrifuges like these. I got this from Wikipedia, but I think it's fine. The device spins very fast, and the isotopes, since each type of isotope has a different weight, are separated by that difference in weight. And you can't see it in this image, but the heavier isotopes fall into a previous centrifuge, and the lighter ones go up to the next. This process is not only used to create atomic bombs here. You can see that it depends on the percentage. It is used for different purposes, such as fuel for nuclear submarines. One very interesting thing is that for a nuclear power plant, the percentage is enough to be 3 or 5%. And of course, they realized that Iran was enriching uranium beyond that 5%. In other words, they suddenly realized that they weren't doing it exactly to light streetlights, and so the county sheriffs, they got angry. Stuart couldn't access Nathan's facilities via the internet since his computers were on isolated networks. So the infection was a bit more like a movie. Someone had to voluntarily or involuntarily insert an infected USB into a computer in the plant. Then the malware spread until it reached its real target. Within the network, it inspected each computer looking for the Siemens Step 7 software, the program that controlled the centrifuges. If it didn't find it, it went dormant, but if it detected it, it deployed the attack, intercepted the orders sent to the industrial controllers, and rewrote the centrifuges' instructions. The centrifuges began to increase and decrease their revolutions drastically and intermittently, generating a high risk of breakage or even explosion. Stuit was so advanced that it could impersonate the control signals to make it seem like everything was working properly. Even if the operators noticed, it could override the emergency shutdown switches. After a few days, the virus would then start to work again. After 12 months, around 1,000 centrifuges were destroyed. Iran's nuclear program would have to start from scratch. Unwittingly, SDNet spread all over the world and could be investigated. So when Edward Snowden leaked NSA documents, he confirmed what had been an open secret. SDNet was a joint operation between Israel and the United States as part of the Olympic Games program, a collaboration between the CIA, the NSA, and the 8200 to prevent Arman from acquiring nuclear weapons, and SDNet would not be the only malware with this hallmark, URAM. First, in 2011, Dooku appeared, a program that spied on industrial facilities looking for documents, plans, and keys necessary for future attacks. Since it shared part of the code and design of SDNet, it was obvious where it came from. The following year, in Iran, and computers at the Ministry of Petroleum and the National Iranian Oil Company discovered that malware was stealing and erasing their information. When Kaspersky Lab analyzed the malware, they discovered that it was unlike anything they had seen before. It had code 100 times more longer than any other malware. The Russian cybersecurity company admitted that they had not managed to fully understand it, and other experts from the Budapest University of Technology and Economics said the following. It is without a doubt the most sophisticated malware that we have come across in our experience. It is probably the most complex that has ever been discovered. They called it Flame, and apparently it had been operating for years without anyone detecting it. It was a mix between a Trojan, a worm, and a spyware. It ran on Windows and allowed the attacker to do whatever he wanted with the infected computer. It consisted of several modules that were activated according to the target and was capable of spying on everything that happened on an infected computer, documents, video, and audio recordings. So it even sent screenshots and logged keyboard activity. It collected everything that could be useful and then erased its tracks using a self-destruct module. Given what happened with Stuxnet, it was clear that the malicious person could inflict real damage and was so embedded in the Iranian network that they had to shut down data centers and oil fields to contain the infection. That one, the level of complexity and the fact that it spread to all of Israel's enemies left no doubt that the 8200 was involved. But that same year, Kaspersky found another malware work from the same family. It was called Gauss and was designed to track the money of Israel's enemies. Gauss also consisted of several modules that were downloaded and activated according to the mission. It was dedicated to stealing banking credentials, browser sessions, and financial data. Kaspersky's analysis revealed that Lebanon was the epicenter of the infections and that the malware had focused on three banks: Bank of Beirut, Byblos Bank, and Blonde Bank. These were not random targets, they were the banks used by networks linked to Hezbollah Iran and other organizations suspected of financing projects against Israel. Gauss was not trying to steal funds, but rather to track suspicious financial flows and thus understand who was behind whatever happened. After these viruses, it seems clear that the unit continued to wage cyber warfare, but they also focused on even darker activity, because new technologies have given rise to tools of control and surveillance, so advanced that they seem to belong to 1984, and these activities fall within the scope of operations of the 8200. In 2014, the biggest internal scandal of the 8200 unit broke out. 43 veterans published this open letter. In it, they refused to continue participating in espionage operations inside the occupied Palestinian territories. They denounced that Israel denied the most basic rights to Palestinians and that it collected personal information such as health problems, political affiliations, debts, sexual orientation, and then used it to recruit collaborators through blackmail. Later interviews described an environment where 18-year-old soldiers had immense power over the lives of thousands of people without real supervision or ethical limits. According to some of these soldiers, the reason I decided to refuse was when I understood that I was doing the same work that the intelligence services of any non-democratic regime do. The army denied the accusations and the protest did not escalate, but a decade later, the tools had evolved and the possibilities for population control multiplied.
Oh, shoot.
In 2021, the Washington Post uncovered the Blue Wolfa program, a facial recognition app described by a soldier as the secret Facebook of the Palestinians. Soldiers were asked to photograph anyone passing by on the street with their cell phones. The app would display the color of their faces in green, yellow, or red. This way, the soldier knew whether to stop, question, or let that person through. And Blue Wolf was just the pocket version. Its big sister, Red Wolf, did the same at checkpoints. Fixed cameras decided who was allowed to cross the military crossings that separate one area of the Jordanians from another. But Israel uses facial recognition cameras and sensors not only at checkpoints. In cities like Hebron, the cameras function as a real-time urban surveillance system, and according to some accounts, can even watch inside homes. Despite its advanced systems, when it finally launched its attack in 2023, Unit 8200 had absolutely no idea of the situation. It was a major setback for the unit, but it quickly regained its prestige. According to Reuters, the 8200 was involved in the operation that killed dozens of Hezbollah members. VIPers, or pagers, are old-fashioned devices for sending and receiving messages by radio frequency. Members of Hezbollah used them to evade Israel's digital surveillance. On September 17, 2024, those VPRs began beeping. Nothing strange, it seemed like a new message had arrived, but when users rushed to read it, the beepers literally exploded in their faces. Upon checking the devices, it turned out that the battery was somewhat larger than usual. Normal, because they had put an extra layer of plastic explosive in them that, rest assured, batteries do not usually have. And that was what turned these pagers basically into bombs. Someone, a military unit expert in signals, had to design and install a sophisticated miniaturized detonator invisible to X-rays, a detonator that was activated by the arrival of a specific message to all the devices at the same time. To carry out this operation, they created a shell company in Hungary, domiciled in this little house, and this in turn obtained a contract to create and sell devices under the umbrella of Gold Apollo, a Taiwanese brand that sells this type of device. So they created this new model, the AR924, which appeared in the Gold Apollo catalog, but could only be purchased on this website, apollosystemhk.com, which of course looked like the official website, but it wasn't, because it was a website that belonged to the Israelis. By the way, they even went to the trouble of creating one of those ads that brands publish on YouTube. Here you can see the features of the device. As you can see, things like protection against dust, waterproof, and high-capacity rechargeable lithium battery. Up to 85 days of battery life. Be careful. By the way, you can even hear the notifications sound. When Hezbollah renewed its devices, the most suitable and best-priced one was the one sold to them by the Israelis. Hezbollah acquired the Vipers and unknowingly signed its death sentence. But the Never attack started something more, a type of war in which an AI makes decisions about human lives. The commander of the 8200 resigned after the October 2023 attacks. This was the same commander who had been identified for his book, and that book was about the future of military intelligence and the creation of a machine capable of processing vast amounts of data and generating potential military targets in seconds. This machine would eliminate the bottleneck of a human having to decide whether or not someone should be attacked. And the Gaza war has shown that the machine the commander was talking about already exists. The Gospel is an AI system whose job is to identify buildings and facilities of military value. Based on aerial images, usage patterns, and connections to other targets, the system generates lists of locations that should be bombed. Another, even more disturbing system is called Lavender. It is a program that combines databases and an algorithm that analyzes the entire population of Gaza. Based on a small group of already identified combatants, the algorithm learns behavior patterns and builds statistical profiles. These assign each person a score that measures not what they have done, but rather how similar they are to those already classified as militants of Hamas or Islamic Jihad. This score is obtained by combining thousands of personal data such as phone calls, behavioral habits, and social relationships. The result is a suspicion ranking, where a person's life may depend on whether their score falls above or below a certain value. Some reports suggested that Lavender had a margin of error of 10%, but it has still been used in Gaza to authorize attacks with minimal human supervision. Once Lavender marked a person as a target, other automated surveillance systems were responsible for locating them in real time. One of them, known as Where is Daddy, tracked when the target entered their family home. From an operational point of view, attacking someone in their home is easier than doing so in a military environment. The location is fixed and predictable. The system sends automatic alerts that activate the attack process. The result is that many bombings were carried out at night with entire families inside their homes. In practice, an algorithm decides who dies, where, and when. That's why it's no coincidence that there have been so many civilian deaths in this war. Leaked information from within the military says that in order to decide whether or not to attack, the algorithm includes parameters such as how many collateral casualties are acceptable based on the importance of the target. For many analysts, this is a turning point. Algorithms are making decisions about human lives based on data collected without consent, decisions that are literally inhumane and that also carry no accountability. For many, the 8200 is the nerve center of Israeli innovation, but it is also the creator of a system of control over millions of people, deciding even their lives. And if all this sounds disturbing to you, wait to see what happened when former members of the 8200 took their talent to the private sector, because there's a company we haven't talked about, NSO. They created software that can break into any phone with a simple missed call or text message, a perfect weapon that promised to save thousands of people but ended up ruining reputations, governments, even lives. Its name was Pegasus, and its story has its own video if you want to know how the spy masterpiece ended up becoming one of the biggest scandals of our time. And remember that you have a discounted link to Proton in the pinned comment. Bye.